BIR Radio is mainly an opinion paranormal talk show. All opinions, comments, or statement of facts expressed by BIR Radio's guests are strictly their own and do not represent or to be endorsed by BIR Radio, ASPRN, Paranormal Radio Network, and their affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International, and you're listening to Para Investigators Radio.
Welcome to PIR Radio. PIR Radio is sponsored by the Peach State Paranormal Society and www.hauntedtube.com. Let's now go get your paranormal radio experience with your hosts, Kurt Smith and Bill Horton.
Already it's Monday and you know it's PIR Radio time every Monday night. Live, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Paranormal Radio Online Network. If you can't catch us live, you can catch the podcast, but hopefully if you're a podcast listener out there, you can catch us live on Monday nights. Join us either on the website Pro, or you can check us out at www.pirradio.com and click the Pro tab. Don't forget, we also stream to the PPRN Radio Network. Hello to everyone over there. So we have a great show lined up, and as always, I have my host from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Bill Horton, with me. How's it going, Bill?
It's almost 60 in Philadelphia, Kurt.
Dang, we had about 45. We're supposed to be going to 50 sometime this week, so all our snow is melting.
Awesome. Yeah, ours is too. It's like mountains of snow in a parking lot that are dwindling down to nothing, so that's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool to watch it go down slowly.
But, as far as the paranormal stuff, didn't really have anything happen. We had to turn down a case. We went out there twice. I was out there once. Strange case. We think there's the girl actually has some substance abuse and actually should seek help. But so that's what we offered. We sent Nora over to her. Nora's pretty busy right now. I don't know. She has a heavy caseload. So hopefully she'll be able to call her, but then I had to turn the lady away, and she said she'll find somebody else. It's kind of a messy situation there. Ex-boyfriend, a little bit of abuse, it's hard to take, but I got this girl on the phone and she's crying and I'm trying to help her, but after I talked to the team, they said, hey, this is, we've been there twice and we know the story,
Well, at least you're upfront and honest.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
They can slam you and badmouth you, but you know what? Deep down and in your heart, you guys made the right decision for the safety of your team and,
Oh, yeah, I agree. And that's probably key for any new investigators. You're going to run across this all the time where there's going to be situations where you really want to help these people and, we're just not trained to be therapists or, I mean, we do a lot of therapy work, but it's mostly dealing with the paranormal. And it's hard. It's hard when you have a mother that's upset and screaming,
true,
from her heart, and then the daughter's crying. So I just warn all these junior paranormal teams, you're going to step in shit one day, and it's not easy. And it seems to be reoccurring. I think the economy, stress factors, all these things drive people to a higher sense, mm-hmm. either or paranormal. So anyway, but outside of that, Kurt, all's well in Philadelphia.
All's well ends well. But, hopefully everyone likes the new revamped PAR Radio website. Thanks to Bill Horton. He did a great job on it.
Thanks.
Don't forget to, we do have a forum page now, so we'll get that going. It's up and going. If you want to register on that, that'd be awesome. We're going to start discussions on there. And don't forget tonight, if anyone out there listening live that has a question, feel free to ask. We're over in the Pro chat room at www.paranormalradioonline.com or pirradio.com, click Pro tab. If you have a question for our guest, feel free to private message us. Or if you want to call in, we do have a call-in number that if you want to ask the guest. It's 678-459-2548, and we'll give out that number throughout the show if you want to call in and talk to the guest. We have a really interesting topic tonight. I mean, this is, to some it might not be paranormal, but to me, it's something that's brand new and exciting, and when I got an email from him, I was like, you know what, this is going to be interesting. It's something, you know. Don't forget to check out his website, and we'll give that out quite a few times, and we'll have our guests give out the website a few times too. So, but you know, it's going to be an interesting topic, and I'm going to let our guest explain what the topic is about, and we're going to get, you know, we're going to have a great discussion about it, and hopefully, you know, I know when I go back and listen to the podcast, I'm going to learn a lot, and you know, it's interesting. It's something I think you'll be amazed. That's all I can say is you'll be amazed. But without further ado, you know, let's bring our guest on. Les, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thank you very much for having me, Bill, Kurt. Thank you.
We're excited. Now, with what you're going to talk about, before we get into that, I would like you, if you could, we know you have a website. If people want to, we're going to let you do this at the beginning and at the end of the show. That way they will visit your website to correlate with what we're talking about tonight. Can you give out your website address and how people can contact you real quick?
Sure. There's email links on the website, which is impactoptics.com, impactoptics, one word, .com. And the website has been online for about 15 years now, since 1995. I have been posting image developments from petrophotoglyphs to this website. Petrophotoglyph is a photo-inscribed stone, something which I discovered in 1994. They are ancient video message systems, the platform for contact with an ancient and highly advanced intelligence who utilized this technology similar to our technologies of integrated circuit processing, where we overlay masks photolithographically, embedding them using lasers and e-beam targets to embed the images onto a silicon surface, and then we interconnect them. In this case, the images were embedded in stone, interconnected visually. They form a perfect hologram, and that hologram is their means of communication with a civilization in the future that had the technology to decipher or translate these images. We are that civilization. We have the technology, we have photography, we have control of spectrum of our lighting. We can control which wavelengths and the intensity of the wavelengths to any degree we require in the visual spectrum that will illuminate these objects and project the holograms. And then we can record this massive flow of information and decipher frame by frame, essentially, what the message is.
Hey, Les, I had a question. So when this is built, and when you're projecting these images, are you just, explain that a little further. Are you bouncing off the stone? Are you shining through a layer of the stone? How are you getting these images? Because I've been looking at your website. It's quite impressive the comparisons that you make with these images to, you know, like I saw one that was compared to a different stone, a different inscription.
All I do, and essentially what it would take to see these in real time would be an image inverting system, or looking at everything in the negative. An example would be if you're looking out on the Gulf of Mexico. I live on the Gulf of Mexico. I would look out and I would see red water. This is not natural. This is something that we don't identify with. But blue water, which would be the visual invert of red, would essentially, we would understand that, and we could then process that information. Here, these stones, which are small, the ones I gathered, over 200 of them in 1995, most most of the information I get from them is in the negative field, though you can see on some of them highly detailed tooling, though it is not an inscription technology that I've ever studied. And I have a degree in archaeology from Arizona. I also have over 30 years of microelectronic processing engineering experience in the field, and I worked with lasers extensively. These objects, in my opinion, were built with very sophisticated lasers and inscription tools, though I have I know for a fact that we could not replicate these stones. But if you go to the website, I've put some images there where the stone actually is seen in a positive field and then a negative field. And for example, I'm looking at one now. It's the Genesis petroglyph, and it's the story of the one that has the ark in it. Let me see, the ancient god and the ark of salvation. You can find that either on the main page or in the website map. And then if you go, you'll see the stone in translation, positive, negative. And then it's in the negative field that the image structures propagate from that stone. Capture right. those with a camera, and then go to our database of knowledge and decipher what that projection is. The images are photographic in detail, ghost-like. In fact, you follow these images in a contiguous fashion. You can see the eyes blinking, the mouth moving, those types of things on these images.
So when you say these are small, how big are these stones? You know, size of a coin or size of, you know, a coffee cup?
The Genesis petroglyph, 10 centimeters, 4 inches by 4 inches. The other one, the unicorn petroglyph, is two pieces. Probably each one is a circumference of about 3 inches.
So you collected these stones back in 1995. And what I know you're an archaeologist, and that would probably be the giveaway to my own question, but what made you decide to go to this field in as I call it, misery, because I've been in Missouri for some basic training, but what made you decide to pick up these 200 stones, and how long did you do that in the course of a day, or, I mean, how long did it take you to get these stones?
At the time, I was living out west, in Arizona, went there on Christmas. Had been there before to the family farm in the southeast part of the state. No archaeological sites. There was an old Civil War burial ground not too far from the area. It's totally rural farmland, and the only residents of the area, the only pre-Columbian residents were the Chococa, who essentially lived there. They were the mound builders, very, very sophisticated group of people who just vanished, essentially. But there were no archaeological sites in the area. So it was Christmas Day, walking down the road with my son and niece, and they picked up these two stones that fit together. That was 1994. That was the unicorn petroglyph. I never did work in the field of archaeology or anthropology, though I did learn all the technologies and the processes of doing archaeological digs, studied ancient civilizations, physiology of ancient hominids and primates and all that. But the technology that was applied to these artifacts was well beyond anything that I had ever experienced, and looked more like things I was accustomed to in the field of microelectronics, which is where I worked, which is where I was at the time.
So Les, let me just back up a second. So you're telling me your son made the discovery, not you. Is that what you're telling me?
That's right. They picked up the first ones, handed them to me. They fit together, conspicuously appeared to be, just from the onset, appeared to be you know, petrified bone more than stone. Subsequent to that, I did have the stones tested. There was no carbon material based in these artifacts. Took some hydrochloric acid right out and poured it on, and there was absolutely, it just rolled right off. Where if there was any carbon compound, there would have been reaction.
So this first discovery was actually in Arizona. Is that, did I hear that
well,
right?
Well, no, it was in Missouri. I did find samples. I call them libraries in the Southwest Desert in near Quartzsite. I found samples between on I-10 between LA and Phoenix, and I found samples in other areas in Phoenix, just generally in that area there. I think these stones were part of a library that was left behind, a time capsule library, and the projections being visual transcend the requirements of language. So any person of any language persuasion can pick these articles up and illuminate them in the 21st century with the technology we have. That's what they were meant to do. However, they were probably carried by the indigenous priests and the shamans of Mesoamerican civilizations and also in the Americas here, and they would carry them. Possibly they were shown what was in there at some point by the artisan and deposited them in places where they could be found.
Now, when your son first gave you the first two and you saw these, how long did it take to realize how long testing wise with the materials and all that, did you realize that you had a discovery of these petrophotoglyphs?
It took almost 6 months of studying them just with a magnifying glass, and then finally photographing. And once you photograph one of these objects, even though you're in a positive field and you're seeing colors exactly as they are, you get the understanding and image that there's more there in your mind. I think of the work of an artist. He's the sidewalk chalk artist. His name is Julian Beaver. And if you've ever seen his work, he chalks an area of sidewalk and then he sets a camera up and puts himself into that area of chalk, and the finished product, you can go online, it's Julian Beaver, but it looks like he's like sitting in the middle of this sky, on top of a skyscraper looking down into this abyss. It's just so incredible, the image captured by the eye of the camera and the perspective. He builds the entire chalk drawing to that, and that's the way these were basically configured. The spatial aspect along with the spectral, what colors of light hit that, or what colors of light actually reflect from the artifact, and also the spatial position are two very critical factors in deciphering or pulling out the projections from these stone scribed holograms, and they are perfect holograms. On the order of the hologram that was in the initial Star Wars, that little one R2-D2 is carrying around, and the hologram of the princess telling about her being captive on the Death Star, and she was a perfect hologram. That's what this is, a perfect hologram. An example would be the Genesis petroglyph in one direction shows the deity holding the ark, and all the images on the ark, and a complete message and star map is part of that. And if you turn it 90 degrees, you get the photographic image of a deity with his shoulders from the shoulders up, looking down at his pyramid temple. And that would be the ancient deity in his temple. Both of those are described and also displayed with the image developments on that website, www.impactoptics.com. It's research. I don't sell anything. I do support this research by printing out their Chromalux, a very picture-perfect, photographically bright media, and I do sell those of these images, but other than that, there are absolutely no advertisements on this website. It's all research, and it's the research I've done over the past 15 years.
No, go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
Hey, Lex, have you taken your findings or these stones to other places to see if people try to, you know, figure this out for you or not, maybe not figure it out, but to validate your techniques or anything? Or the stones themselves, like can somebody else replicate what you do? Is it that simple?
Oh, absolutely. You could, where you're sitting, you could take any image, positive image on that I have of a petrol photoglyph from the website and bring it into a simple image program, one that you would use to crop maybe your digital photographs, and just a simple invert function is what is necessary. You put a little bit of the color that's been taken out, which is red, and take away a little bit of the blue when you do that with these artifacts.
Most time you're just shooting these stones with a camera. Then is that how you're getting
the image? That's it. The lighting. When I light up the stone, I light it up in a computer.
See, Lex. You know, I'm glad you said that, because in my mind, I'm thinking you're cutting these stones and making a slide and shining light through them and all this great stuff. You know, like high tech. You know, like I'm talking like you're putting. See, I'm a film projectionist. That's what I've done. Audiovisual wise, but that's what I was thinking in my mind, that you're illuminating the stone to physically with light.
I've done that. You can illuminate the stone
that helps.
And get the exact same results.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's neat because it's so simplistic, I guess. Now, you know, it's, you know, just put it into a Photoshop and tweak it a little bit, and boom.
Your FanView or Microsoft Photo Editor, any simple program that will take a positive, turn it into a negative. And you can take any photo petroglyph or subcategory of petroglyph from the website I have posted there, take it, turn it inside out, you get the same imaging. You can replicate any of those, anybody can.
Hey, Les. Right before we go to break, I just want you to talk about this term, photopetroglyphs, because I'm sure people are hearing this and saying, well, I've never heard that either. And guess what? I've never heard it till I reviewed your site either. And maybe you can explain how you came up with this term and what you tried to do to preserve the whole term and the theory here.
I've got to tell you from the onset that a petrol photoglyph is a term that you will not find anywhere. If you Google that word, I would be the only resource for that. There are photoglyphs. That's a technology that's been around since the mid 1900s. I would say process of actually inscribing photographs onto metal surfaces, flat metal surfaces. Mm-hmm. We can laser etch materials, images onto surfaces. We cannot laser etch photographic images onto stone or etch any type of photographic imaging on stone at this point. We don't have that technology. We can photolithographically scribe masks onto silicon, and that's how an integrated circuit is built. Overlaid masks, interconnected electrically, manifested as a PNP junctions, NPN junctions, or your integrated circuit. Here, the overlaid masks of scribe are etched in stone, interconnected visually, and they form a video communication, a hologram. Holo means hologram means whole recording, and that's what this is. The message comes through visually, transcending the language barrier. The message comes through in detail, in such detail that we can utilize our database of knowledge and understand what these projections mean by going to our database of religious and scientific and historical knowledge. Petrol, stone, photoglyph means glyph means inscription or writing, photograph, photographic inscription. So that's what the word is, and Wikipedia wouldn't let me identify that word, which is a noun. So I hold this artifact in my hand, and it's not allowed in the database of humanity. That's the gist of it.
Awesome, but hey, Les, if you can hold on, we're gonna go to we're gonna have our Lex Wall story time real quick. So if you can hang on,
okay,
we'll be right
sure.
back with you, folks. You're listening to PIR Radio Night with our guest Laser Les from Impact Optics. Visit his website when you get a chance. It's very interesting. You'll love what he has going on with his research with the petrophotoglyphs. It's www.impactimpactoptics.com. Get a chance, visit it, and we'll be right back after Lex's story tonight.
PIR Radio will be right back after these messages.
This is Lex Wall, or PIR Radio Storyteller. This week I'm going to change things up a bit. We're going to hear a couple stories from Will in the UK, but Will has recorded himself telling the experience. This was from a show that ran in April of 2007. Hope you enjoy.
Hi Lex, this is Will from the UK. I thought I'd send you an MP3 of some interesting things that actually happened to me some years ago at my house when I lived with my parents. Around about 12 years ago, my brother passed away in an accidental death. It hit like the family quite hard, as you obviously can imagine. But after, you know, a couple of weeks, life started sort of going back to some sort of normality. And I came home from work one day to be approached by my other brother, who said that from our landing, we've got big like windows, he saw something or someone go into my bedroom, and he went in there and there was nothing there. Also on the same day, unknown to him, my mum told me that she went into my bedroom to put my washing on my bed and she felt a presence in there. Now I just thought maybe it could be wishful thinking, it could be anything, you know. But that weekend, I had a friend over and we decided to go on the internet, or what was then the internet version. Everything seemed fine, everything seemed normal. Around about 9:30 p.m. we heard a back gate slam. Realising it was ours, we thought that's a bit odd, and then the back door slammed. So I undid my bedroom door and shouted out, you know, to my brother, you know, can you stop banging and making so much noise? Didn't get a response, but suddenly both my parents' dogs came running upstairs. I thought, well, a bit odd. Then we heard a cupboard go, and then we heard someone get what sounded like a glass, and the glass tinked. And we thought, this is really weird. So again, I shouted out, you know, can you keep it down a bit? Got no reply, so I sort of getting a bit panicked. I shut my door, got hold of a pair of scissors, waiting for someone to run upstairs and try and mug me and my friend. Nothing. Then we started hearing footsteps coming upstairs, and there's a slight crack through my door. I always remember that. I'm looking for it and could not see anybody. So with this, we began becoming hysterical. Me and my friend were, you know, like, what do we do, what do we do? Sort of like really panicking, not knowing. Picked up the phone and there was no dial tone, which was very strange as well. So we got even more and more like wound up and panicked. So what did we do? we ready to go for the door, ready for someone to burst in. She picked up the phone and suddenly there was a dial tone. So I rang up a neighbour and said, come round quick, someone's broken into our house. They got round quite quickly, luckily, and banged on the front door. So we bolted downstairs at the rate of knots. You just wouldn't believe how quick we got downstairs. Opened the door up. To the relief, our neighbour was standing there. Came in and he started looking around the house for anyone and couldn't find anything. Went all the way downstairs, went into the back garden. Now, the odd thing was, the back gate that we heard slam was locked, and the back door that we heard go was locked as well. So it was like, okay, maybe, you know, my other brother came in, got something, and then went back out. But we didn't hear the front door go, so that couldn't have been right. Now, I know the only people in this house was me, my friend, and our two dogs. I'm not sure that dogs can actually open up doors at the moment but and lock them, but you never know. Went upstairs, again, nothing was disturbed. And then we looked up. Now, the really, really bizarre thing here was the attic door was open. Now, I can't 100% guarantee it wasn't open that day, but I don't remember seeing it. And when I walk into my bedroom, you actually see the ceiling quite clearly. I would have thought that if it was open, I would have seen it. Not sure, but, you know, after that, it really, really scared me. I never actually spoken to my mum about this or anybody. So that's my ghost story. So this is Will from the UK. I hope you enjoyed this. Keep up the good work. I'm really enjoying other people's ghost stories. And I'll send another MP3 soon with some of the spooky goings-on in my new place. Bye-bye.
And now we send you back to the Honorable Kurt and Sir Bill of PIR Radio.
Man, Kurt. Honorable.
I know. What's up with that?
We're going to have to fix this guy. I just noticed that he just signed back up to the website to post back in the forum. Thanks, Lex, for doing that because we had a database update and crashed the whole site.
Bill crashed the whole site.
Yeah.
But we're having a great show right now, so don't forget to check out our new website, www.pirradio.com, and sign up for the forum. We're going to start getting into some discussions there, you know. So it's going to be fun, you know. Hopefully you'll check it out. But we have a great show tonight. Our guest is Laser Les from ImpactOptics.com, and we're talking about photopetroglyphs. Now we were discussing at break, and in regards to with the photoglyphs, petrophotoglyphs, Les. Now, is there any correlation with your findings and the 2012 phenomenon?
Yes. There's a codex, a hologram message that generates from the one stone called the Genesis petroglyph. It commences with an image of the most prominent glyph or figure that can be seen with the naked eye. It's excised or comes out of the stone, is a series, a concentric triad of lines. Looks like a peanut. That's what the head of the archaeology department told me. That when I brought him these stones at Arizona State, I got a degree from there, went back and talked to this gentleman. There's no reference for this. The technology didn't exist. Therefore, these artifacts could be nothing more than natural perturbations in stone, but they're not. And the Genesis petroglyph is proof of that. Just looking at this artifact and the triad of lines and that. That forms a figure wearing a strapped-down helmet with a set of hot side horns. That strapped-down helmet is a Choctaw helmet, a Mesoamerican helmet. The image of a deity holding a crescent-shaped vessel, that would be the Ark in the Al-Chahasis, and the story of the deity Enki, who told Al-Chahasis through the walls of his reed hut to build a crescent-shaped vessel, save himself and the remnants of the animal world by taking what tantamounts to genetic material from all of the animals. What went into the ark, according to the codex that becomes that projects from the stone, is what went into the ark is not what came out of the ark. There was genetic modeling on the ark. of the animals, and what came out was essentially the new world compatible with humanity, if you think about that. The image of the deity who saved humanity is identified by his epitaphs of the fish that propagates from his head and a goat that's holding in his hand. That's the Capricorn. That would be the deity Enki. Embedded within his image is a star map, the most detailed stone scribed star map I have ever seen, and I would put it up against any that's been discovered at this point. Anyway, this star map identifies the cosmic orbit of a body that's going to interface with Earth at some point. The timing becomes obvious when you look at the face of this kneeling deity and see that he's wearing a mask with a nose that's been pierced in a Mixtec or Mesoamerican fashion of sainthood. This was found in the codices from Chichen Itza in Mesoamerica. The deity would be Pekal too. So we have the Mesoamerican connection, we have the Mesopotamian connection, we have the flood, we have a star map pinpointing an object, we have the Great Pyramid, it's all there. All we have to do is find what they're trying to tell us and build that crescent-shaped vessel and we're out of here. But that doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone needs to figure out, you know, because this whole 2012 thing is pretty
scary.
You know, it's scary. There's different speculations. There's different theories. And then there's the real scientific theory that the whole magnetic shift and all this other good stuff is going to get rid of California. And I don't know where you're not. I don't think you're.
No, I'm ground zero in Florida. I'm sitting right here on the Gulf. So
you're going to go.
The first wave that comes through, I'm either sinking or swimming. But
Lex,
I think it's going to be change. I think there's going to be a change in an understanding that perhaps an alien of great stature and technology and age comes to Earth, maybe back to Earth. I think our ancients, I honestly believe our ancients sat with these deities and built temples to them, and the deities sat in these temples. They made sacrifices and worshiped them. And we might just be doing that again.
I hope not. That's so primitive and so...
Well, it might be good.
You know, because I can only imagine heads rolling down the temple steps, you know. I don't know.
Oh, well, that might have happened after they left, too. You never know. What trends we might have decided to carry on after.
Well, I don't know what could reoccur, you know. That's what I'm worried if we have to, you know. But anyway, so I guess, you know, what's the next step for you with this? I mean, you put it on the internet and it'll survive after 2012 as long as you're dead.
I hope so. I am not a predictor of doom by any chance. I'm just reading the projections from a stone scribed by an alien artisan. That's all I'm doing. And the alien artisan is telling us something. He's
right.
Telling me something. He's telling me that he is the one that was called God throughout the history of humanity. The unicorn petroglyph projects this creature. I mean, the image of this creature is ghost-like. It is a three-dimensional hologram of a creature with a single swirled horn. His tongue is being pulled out of his mouth, spear through his jaw, a blanket on his back, a garment on his back, a double-handled bridle, and this bizarre scenario is captured word for word, verse for verse, in the oldest story incorporated in the Bible, the book of Job. Specifically, chapter 41, they talk about the Leviathan. In 39, they talk about, this is King James Version now, a unicorn. In 40, it's a behemoth or a pastoral creature. And in 41, it's the it's the Leviathan, everybody thinking Leviathan is a serpent, a sea serpent. And there was a chapter, Isaiah, where Isaiah 1, God said he was going to slay the coiled serpent, the Leviathan, and that was in representation of possibly the Babylonian navy, and God was going to protect the children of Israel from this threat, and that's what the implication was. But Leviathan is a transliterated term that means swirled. It doesn't mean swirled sea serpent. It means coiled or swirled, and that's referring to the swirled horn on this pastoral creature standing in a furrow, which is detailed in chapter 39. Can you bind the unicorn with his band in a furrow or ditch? Standing in a ditch. And what's very interesting there is we have another Mesoamerican connection, because here we have this unicorn, the most elusive creature known to humanity, Marco Polo, Serenpa. And back to the beginning of humanity have searched for this creature for one reason. This creature is an avatar of the Creator. Like the movie Avatar, the change of form in order to fit the environment. That's what this creature was described to Job as at the end of the story. And it's at the end, the last three chapters, that the Creator describes this creature, verse after verse, in more detail than any thing in the entire Bible, person, place, I'm talking about the physical characteristics of this creature is described in greater detail in the Bible than any other thing in the. And I'm not a scholar, but I would like to hear anybody talk about it with me. This thing is tethered to another avatar, and you could see that in the developments of. From the unicorn petroglyph, you can see this creature, which is the exact image of Quetzalcoatl, or the feathered serpent from Mesoamerica. So we have two tethered avatars. The message that comes through here is the emissary of God, the manifestation of God that walked through the civilizations on Earth, diversifying the languages, diversifying the religions, scattering them. That was done for a reason. And to in Mesoamerica, it was Quetzalcoatl. In Euro-Asia, it was the unicorn. That's the message that's coming from these artifacts in video detail. I don't go to movies anymore, I can tell you that.
Well, it sure is interesting what you're able to get from these stones and how you can associate them with all the different things. I mean, the planetary stuff, the other reflections to the Bible and everything else. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, it's our database of knowledge. All I do is turn on my computer, go and Google whatever I see, and I get the reference.
Oh, you know, I see.
It's simple. I mean, you don't have to be anything but human, and in the 21st century, in modern times, to be able to do this. And the technologies, the internet came up about the time that you know, 95, it was still pretty new, but it became immediately apparent that this was going to be a valuable tool in understanding what these things were. And then the technology and digital imaging, I didn't have to wait for photographs to be developed. I didn't have to.
Oh, yeah.
I could play, you know, I could programs that enable me to light up the stone as I described earlier. It just all came together at this time. And it's not that I'm Mr. Anybody could be doing this, and there are many more of these around in the world, I guarantee you. Just have to know what to look for.
I mean, I wonder if I can, you know, I love the woods, and there's a great place, but, you know, I should do more experimentation with this and not just throw the stones into the lake and actually take take a second to see if there's any etchings or imagery on them, because you can clearly see the one stone has this, I don't know, it's like a wavy line pattern in the middle of it, you know?
That's, yep. And if you look at that, the spiral, in the universe, the spiral has always symbolized life. And in this stone, the spiral symbolizes the life or the breathing of the kneeling figure. He's wearing a strapped-down helmet. He's holding, if you look at the stone in a positive perspective, it's a chipped-out area, but it's crescent-shaped. And that crescent-shaped, chipped-out area in a negative develops into the most perfectly balanced vessel. If you go to the one page I have that talks about the arc, it shows how perfectly designed this vessel was, with a balance, a counterweight, a buoyancy balance on the bottom, it to keep the vessel upright. Three levels and an opening at the top for ventilation. This comes right out of the Bible. I mean, there's three or four verses describing in high detail how the structure of the ark was supposed to have been in this. And if I never knew that, I could have taken this stone and designed it if I had the means. Just like the book of Job, I could have written the final chapters of the book of Job just by looking at the unicorn petroglyph, by looking at that creature, because that's all that's being talked about. God is manifesting himself to Job through this creature, a description of this incredible creature. One.
I have a question real quick, Les. Sure. Now, talking about, you know, with all the biblical and the ancient times, is it possible, do you think, that with all the stones you got, that you have some kind of archived copy of like the Bible or something? That,
oh,
well, they know, so, like, you know, how they could have had, you know, they could have, you know, known about this technology or somehow, or you know, they were talking to a higher life form, and higher life form actually inscribed a copy of the Bible this way.
But
there you go.
Yeah, because the alien influence to the Bible and to, you know, the whole thing and the Jesus and all this other stuff and all these is always very strong. I believe that. So sorry. Less.
Absolutely. There's a development in the website. It's called The Arm of God and the Unicorn, and it develops just that. It's again visual symbolism, but the creature is rising out of the forearm of an individual whose palm is pierced with a spike. I've developed that. Clearly, symbolism, the message I get is the God, the Savior of the Old Testament and the Creator of the New Testament were one. That's the message I get immediately from that. I mean, Job is in the, you know, one of the first, is the first story of the Old Testament, and had way before the New Testament was written. And here we have a tie-in with that. We have a tie-in with the unicorn in Mesoamerica. These artifacts are a scientific means of proving that the Bible was based on fact, or at least on inscriptions that were provided by an unknown alien intelligence. This was the means, or could have been very well the means, how the Bible was written. How did we understand how the creation occurred? Well, through hologram image projections in stone. It's very likely that Moses on Mount Sinai, there was a stone lit up, just like I light the stones up and show them on the internet. A stone could have been lit up for Moses that displayed a burning bush. It could have been a hologram. A bush that didn't burn could have very well have been a hologram. The technology, this inscription technology, is so alien and yet so viable that you could almost use it to define many things, including images of ghosts. Because the images that project from these artifacts are so vivid. They're more than a painting, more than a drawing, and more than a photograph, because they're a whole recording.
I agree, and you know, I think the essence of the images, you must have some, I don't know, the artistic skill or the eye, or, I mean, I don't know if you're artistic and able to...
Not at all.
Really?
I'm not, no. Never been.
I would have thought because, you know, when you look at something, to be able to see, you said it's simple, you see it and you go identify it on the internet, and thank God for the internet, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to see it and know what you're seeing, and that's the hard part for me.
Well, who wouldn't know what a creature with a single swirled horn might not look like anything you've ever seen, but it's got a single swirled horn.
I see, and you go search that.
Yeah, there are symbols, there are epitaphs, there are signs that identify the players in these that propagate from these, and that's how you identify what it is.
I think it was definitely your calling to be there in that field with your son and him to hand them to you.
Oh,
because if this would have happened to me, you know, I would have said, "Hey, you want to keep them?" And they would have been on the shelf somewhere. You know what I mean, or a box, a toy box.
Oh, I guarantee you.
No,
they would have been trashed by all the people,
right?
I know that too. It's
insane. So I believe that the whole phase of it all and the whole thing of it all, like you said, there was in 1995 the internet started, the digital imaging started, which saved you a ton of money, by the way,
from and time, absolutely,
and time, and all these things converged, and you were the right person at the right time, and the time was right to I'm going to say develop, I don't know if that's the right word, but to figure this all out. And so that to me, Les, is key, because like you said, you I'm glad you admitted it. I thought you were going to say, no, anyone could see these stones for what they were, and thank God you didn't. But, you know, so everything fell into place to make this possible, and you, I think, also have the, I don't think you realize it, but you have a gift to be able to interpret these images, and
I realize that it's a God-sent gift that these artifacts, you know, some people would have looked at them as a curse in life, and the way things had happened to me, but now the way after this amount of time, there's absolutely no doubt that this has been the most sincere blessing that's ever been bestowed on anyone, even though I'm probably the only one that realizes that.
Do you have anybody that contacts you via through their website or after seeing these and saying, you know, hey man, this is awesome, or you know, I you missed this, I can see this, or no?
No, I mean, I'm on the discussion group, so there's sometimes there's interest. I get a lot of information from people who care. There are a lot of those who accuse me of this pareidolia, you know, perturbations, paraphernal dementia, seeing things in cloud watching.
We call it and the simple term that we call it is matrixing, where people can see a figure in an image, a blurry image, in you know, the ghost in the window, for example. You know,
there you go. Yeah.
And I think there sometimes it's easy to do that with something that's so distorted, like a blurry image of a house that's, you know, 100 yards back, and you zoom in, you know, 10,000 times. But, you know, I think even just looking at your stone here, and you can actually see them with the naked eye. I mean, I mean, you have a brown one. I don't know. I don't even know the stone, but I can see it, you know, I can just see it. And I know one's blue, one looks reddish, but you can see the whatever's in the middle looks like a face to me. But, you know, I mean, so it's not like, I mean, it might be a little matrixy, but it's not something that's so undefined that you have to force yourself to create this image, is what I'm saying. I, you know, and I tell you what, if I can see some of these things, it's pretty convincing, you know, compelling.
And I haven't done such a good job either with better equipment, better process, a method and control of the development process. These things can be developed to a much finer degree, though the image a codex, the image meshes probably would not change essentially. You're taking a single image here of a moving video. It'd be like taking a single image of a movie, and it's good, but it doesn't tell you the whole story.
Hey, Les?
Yes?
I know our hour's almost up here, but I have one more question before we start wrapping it up. Where would you like to see your research go in the future?
Oh, this research? Well, I've always hoped that it would be accepted and utilized for good, possibly to understand that we're not alone, and there is intelligence out there, and it's compatible with us, and we shouldn't fear it. We should welcome it, as we've been taught through our through history and through the religions. We shouldn't fear the unknown, especially when it comes and approaches us. And that's what this is. This is proof of contact. These are cell phones to an ancient intelligence that's talking. So where does it go? I just hope it's accepted by the general population and understood for what it is, which is a message to the general population of 2011.
Well, when the message comes through and they live the message, then that changes things, you know, Les?
Yeah, yes, I know. I understand how that works.
See it, believe it, you know? Feel it, live it.
Well, Bill and Kurt, I do appreciate so much you having me. I thank you so much for the time that you spent.
And I think
hearing me out, it's rare that anybody wants to hear anything about this research.
Well, I think we just got like the basic information. So maybe if we can have you on down the road, we can get into some MTES, into you have a great website with maps of different stones. Maybe we can get some in-depth information about.
Absolutely, there's very much there. Very many stories to tell. Bedtime stories, that's for sure.
So I know there's a whole bunch of more information that we can talk about, especially about the stones. I mean, we just got a basic this is what photopetroglyphs are, this is the start of this is what my research has found, so the next time we come on, we can have a more in-depth discussion on
it. I can introduce you to the ghosts in the stone too.
That'd be
awesome.
Definitely. But hey, before we get off the air tonight, like we always do with all our guests, we're going to let you have the microphone. So if you want to give out your website, and if you want to give any shout-outs to anyone, that'd be awesome.
Okay, well, first I'd like to thank you, Bill and Kurt, for having me. I do appreciate it, hearing me out and having me on your very prestigious show. My website, that would be impactoptics.com. In my opinion, the most incredible website on the internet. It's been like that for 15 years, and possibly the most incredible website that nobody knows about. Any of the images that you see on this website will be alien images. They're not drafted by me, and they can be replicated at any time. And I would like to thank my friend Ali, who runs a gallery in Dunedin, Florida. He's helping me bring out some of these images on Chromalux, which is a very beautiful platform. It's all mounted, and it's a dye sublimation process. It's durable. You can wash it with Windex, and they come in very large sizes. And any of the images you see on the website can be replicated. The contact information for the gallery is there. Anyway, I would like to thank you guys again for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, definitely. And hopefully, with all our listeners, they'll visit the website, www.impactoptics.com. impactoptics.com, and hopefully you'll see an increase to your site. We'll be in touch. What I'll do is once I get the podcast edited, that way, because we had that little bleep, I'll send you a link to the podcast too, Les.
Okay, well, thanks, Kurt, and appreciate your time. I really do.
Absolutely, and we'll be in contact, and we're definitely going to have you back on again.
Thanks, Les. It was a pleasure, and I really did enjoy the show.
Thank you, guys. Bye now.
You have a wonderful night. Thank you. Alrighty, Bill. Well, that was fun. That was an interesting topic. I can't wait to go back and listen to it. He gave out a lot of information, especially when I asked him about 2012.
Oh yeah.
He got really in depth with the. I got most of the names of the gods and all that, but I can't wait to go back and listen to it. It's interesting.
You know, I got to be honest, and I'm sorry, Les. I'm just not educated in that area. When he started mentioning all these gods and the names, and I was like, so yeah, it was totally out of my league. And I'm glad he kept going with it and explained it a little further.
Yeah, it's you know, when you're doing the show and you have different topics on it, you know, as you're on the go show, it's tough to pick up all the pieces. So that's why I always go back and listen to it, because I can't wait. It's an interesting topic. It's something different. You know, we can talk about ghosts all day long. But you know what? We like to change gears here and there.
He definitely knows that these images were created by somebody that could do something with greater technology than we even face today. Because he said his research, even you're not able to reduplicate these. So that also, stems to. He believes it too, and I believe that there's a higher mindset, I guess. I don't know, aliens, you know.
And I know when I have him back on, I'm going to ask him about has he ever had, you know, like the rock, the stones that he's collected, either, you know, X-rayed, MRI'd, or CAT scanned, or, you know.
It's a good idea. That's a good thing. I bet you that would create even a different layer of this.
You know, I mean, we have some of that technology to see. You know, it'd be interesting to see what those types of tests would come up with.
Yeah. Hey, Kurt.
Bill.
Guess what? Has anyone emailed you with the answer to the question?
No, we had no winner to the question last week.
You know what reminded me of it? I was looking at the statistics on the website, and for this month, somebody actually searched and found Paul Shishi on our website. Was that the answer?
No.
Oh, shit.
That's part of it. That was one of three.
One of three. Okay. And the other two people were actually searched on and found on our website were Rochelle Sparrow and William von Holst.
No, they have only been on once.
Yeah, I don't know, but they came up as searches. You know.
Sweet.
Yeah, so we're getting more Google searches. There's been a lot more visits to the website. Like I said, Lex Wall just re-signed up after the database crash.
Yeah, and our hate mail PR lady hasn't even signed up to our website. I can't even believe that. If she's not signed up by the end of the night, we might have to fire her.
Yeah, I think so. She was drinking tonight, by the way.
That's no excuse, though.
When the show was running, yeah. No, it's worse.
It is worse.
Yeah. All right.
But do you have any shout-outs before we go?
No. I thank Lori for being able to be the boss, you know, when I come to her with these crazy cases, you know. And she actually has a new book out, so, you know, she'd go try and buy it, too. I forget the title. But it's a very pictorial book. I have to buy one off her when I see it.
Yeah, we're going to have her on too as a guest to talk about that book.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting.
And I believe she might be giving a copy of it away. I'm not 100% sure on that, but details to come. And no, Mandy cannot win.
Yeah, Mandy already won a book that's soon to be delivered.
Mandy can't win anymore this year.
Well, we need to get more people to come to the chat room, these podcast listeners, and also, come and support this live. I mean, if you have the time, you know, 9 p.m. Eastern, you know.
8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. You know, come join us live on PIR Radio. You can either listen, at www.paranormalradioonline.com and click the live event tab, or you can click, go on to www.pirradio.com and click the Pro tab. We'd love to have as many listeners as we can, you know. And do you know who we have next week, Bill?
Death and the Roses Paranormal. I don't get that, but
Death and Roses Paranormal. I think they're out of the west out of the West Coast, so you know.
The desert, death in the desert, and roses of.
It's kind of, you know, it's different though, you know. Instead of, you know, it seems like lately on Facebook you get a lot of Ghostbusters.
Hey, Kurt, I do have a shout out.
Uh oh.
You know, I've been trying to convince some of the paranormal team to go and seek out the Jersey Devil, and and somebody else said there's another urban legend sort of haunting of some guy near a railroad track in New Jersey, and you can see his silhouette walking across, and then when you turn on your headlights, he's gone.
Interesting.
And, yeah, so I got it. You know, this is, we're doing. I want to do some urban legend fun, but I guess, you know, with the weather changing, maybe that'll be possible.
That could be, yeah, definitely. You have to keep us posted.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. It'll be different because I'm tired of, you know, ghost hunting is a lot like fishing, you know? There's an awful lot of fish in the sea, but you can't catch them, you know?
True. That is true. Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. I get skunked a lot when I go ghost hunting.
Yeah, me too. Skunked. You must have been a fisherman one time in your life.
I did. I like to go fishing a lot. Got skunked quite a few times going fishing.
Me too. All right. Well, I did. I think we kept it paranormal as it could be for the topic. It was more alien paranormal.
Yeah, but you know, hopefully Les got his paranormal radio experience with PIR radio.
Awesome. All right, sir.
All right.
Till next week.
Keep it paranormal.
Thanks, Kurt.
You're welcome, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to PIR Radio.